Today on Movie Royalists, we talk about how to make a killing and Project Hail Mary. For Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
And you.
And yes. That means you.
And you.
Indeed, yes. It does. So, hot on the heels of our last podcast, if you didn't catch that one, we talked about The Bride and the Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair. So, if you haven't caught that one,
and that's not you swearing.
Well, it kind of is.
But it's not. It's a title.
But it was the whole bloody affair, Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Which was the two movies stuck together. I guess we've got a lot to talk about in this podcast.
Yes.
So let's just, no snacks. We talked about those last time. We're still bouncing off the walls with our sugar high.
And we got a new cup of tea.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Sorry, yes, I had to give you Ceylon instead of Assam.
No, this is great. Okay. I love it.
I ran out of Assam tea.
The first Assam was very good, though.
It was. Yeah, that was a Marks and Spencer's brew. The UK Marks and Spencer's?
Yes, of course.
They make a very good tea selection.
I'll have my pinky finger up when I'm drinking.
No, that's a pinky finger is Fortnum & Mason.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay. Which you love. Yeah.
I love it, yes.
Marks & Spencer's, that's more your...
Okay. No, certainly not middle finger up, but...
Okay.
All right, so with that said, we're going to try and squeeze in our segment of I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Video On Demand. This is, well, you know what this is. Let's just talk about what's in our queues. Rashmi, Yazdi,
okay.
What you got?
So, So remember back in the 90s when we were obsessed with reality TV called America's Next Top Model? Joe and I loved that show. We watched like the first five seasons probably, and then we gave up. Anyway, there is a documentary series on Netflix called it's called Reality Check Inside America's Next Top Model, and it is a great docu-series about kind of what happened, how attitudes have changed over the years. It brings back some of the old contestants and some of the gripes that they had, and it talks to the people who were on the panel and how life changed for them and the genesis of the show. So I really enjoyed that.
I'm going to just comment because I watched this too. I remember we binged watched, back in the day it wasn't a thing, but we watched America's Top Model quite religiously.
Yeah, we loved it.
It was like one of those, reality shows in the vein of
like The Apprentice.
MTV's The Real World, The Apprentice. We thought at the time that it was actually very empowering for these young women who would get an opportunity to enter the world of modeling, which could be very lucrative and, demanding. But the top models at the time were considered to be like high earners and superstars.
Yeah.
Boy, what a difference 20 years makes.
Yeah.
When you view that show
from the lens of
from today's
2020
lens.
Perspective. Yeah. It's monstrous, and I mean, you could argue. I responded to it in much the same way. Remember, we watched the America's Sweethearts show on Netflix. Fascinating insider perspective on the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders.
Yes,
but at the end of that season, I had kind of a dirty, grubby, grimy feeling on my hands because I was like, I think I've just taken part in the exploitation of those young girls. This is going to be a horrible quote, but I really did.
We're going to cut that piece out, Joe.
If I ever run for office, that's the thing that they'll play over and over. But I mean, I really did, and I think with America's Top Model, we didn't, as an audience, think we were partaking in something, horrendous, but, there we were. So I wonder what we'll think about in 20 years' time.
That's what you kept saying.
We will always be behind.
What will we look at in terms of today's behaviours that we were like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe we did that, or I can't believe we watched that. So worthwhile watch. Yazdi, what's your pick?
My pick is a movie from 2011, so about 15 years old.
Gosh.
And in honor of the fact that one of, well, we are covering two movies today in our podcast, the big movie is obviously Project Hail Mary, which has Ryan Gosling. And in honor of Ryan Gosling, I'm picking this movie from 2011, which I absolutely love. I watched it in the theater and I've seen it again and again on television. It often shows up. And the name of the movie is Crazy Stupid Love.
Uh-huh.
It's such a fun movie. I really like it. It has a lot of tricks up its sleeve. And just look at the cast for this movie. Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, Marissa Tomei, Kevin Bacon, and Josh Groban. They're all in this movie.
I didn't love it.
Oh, I love that movie.
I didn't love it. There was something about it that felt very contrived to me.
It is very contrived. Yeah. It's like these two groups of family, person A should not know about person C, and they don't find out until
correct.
The end. And then everybody's like, oh my God.
But, yes.
But as these things go, I think it's so much fun. I loved it.
I liked it too. I mean, I think in without the weight of expectations, because the cast was really top billing.
Yeah.
You come to the table expecting something extraordinary, and in the end, what you get, I think, is a good movie watching experience. Greatness falls short of that definition for me, but yeah, good pick.
What's yours?
I'm going out on a limb.
Oh,
further than I've ever been before, because I'm going to recommend something that I haven't watched.
Oh.
You haven't watched. No one's watched.
Oh.
March 20th is the release date for Project Hail Mary. It's also the release date on Netflix of Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man.
The movie.
The movie. So Netflix has resurrected Peaky Blinders, which was a six-season...
We were late to the Peaky Blinders party.
We were, but it was a six-season, I think BBC originally... UK-made... drama series starring the wonderful Cillian Murphy and many others, set around where I grew up in the UK, the Birmingham Midlands, what we used to call the Black Country area, black because lots of coal mines and industry, so people would get their hands all grubby and black, so it became known as the Black Country. I had a wonderful time with Peaky Blinders. Yes, Rashmi, I think, you know, you and I haven't finished the final series because we...
I got a little tired.
It's always at max. Like, Peaky Blinders is one of those shows that's always demanding that you sit there, pay attention, and is stressing you out the whole time because it's high.
Yeah.
It's always very high stakes mob stuff. But nonetheless, I'm really excited to see them come back to this universe. Is some wonderful characters. Tommy Shelby is the main character played by Cillian Murphy, and I'm hopeful. This doesn't always pan out for me, but I'm hopeful that the reason they've come back to this world is not just because they can line their pockets with more money, but because they found the story that they had to tell even though they closed this universe up. So March 20th is when it comes out. Don't yell at me if I got it wrong and this thing sucks, but that's going to be my pick.
I think it's a bit of a cheat.
It is a cheat.
Yeah.
But
so let's recap. Rashmi, your pick was?
It's called Reality Check Inside America's Next Top Model on Netflix.
Yes, you brought us.
Crazy Stupid Love on Netflix.
And a trio of Netflix picks this week with Peaky Blinders, The Immortal Man, coming out on March 20th.
Very good.
Okay. Then let's move on, shall we? We'll talk about two movies, How to Make a Killing and Project Hail Mary. Let's get going.
Yes. We're going to start with how to Make a Killing, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll introduce this one. So writer-director John Patton Ford, and John Patton Ford had made little shorts and made, you know, little... commercials and so forth, and he burst onto the scene 3 years ago in 2022 with a movie called Emily the Criminal, which starred Aubrey Plaza, and I think all three of us are uniformly huge fans of that movie. If you haven't seen it, that forget my recommendation for whatever I recommended, watch Emily the Criminal, which is also on Netflix.
Love that movie.
Also on Netflix. It's brilliant. So John Patton Ford's second movie is the movie we are going to be talking about today, and that's the movie How to Make a Killing. Like Emily the Criminal, this one is also written and directed by him. And the one-liner for it is that a man who is disowned at birth by his obscenely wealthy family will stop at nothing to reclaim his inheritance, no matter how many relatives stand in his way. The man in question is played by the ubiquitous Glenn Powell, who has to be in every other movie these days.
Yeah.
And it also stars the wonderful Margaret Qualley. Ed Harris is here, as well as a few other actors. I don't think I'm missing any major person there. So this movie is playing right now in your cinemas, and I think the title, How to Make a Killing, should give you a bit of a clue. But what did you guys think of this film?
So I'd completely forgotten about it. when Yasti came and we were like, oh, this is what we're going to be podcasting today. Yasti was like, no, I think we've got four movies. And I was like, no. And he said, yeah, it was How to Make a Killing. And I was like, what was that one? And he showed me the picture and I still couldn't remember what it was. So despite that, now I know which one it is. I think this is completely a back of the movie plane, a back of the plane movie. It's you know, it's fun, it's harmless, it moves along, but it literally evaporated from my brain the minute I left the cinema.
Yeah, maybe there was something in the water that day, but Rashmi, I had the very same experience.
Yeah,
this is disposable entertainment.
Yep.
And it is nowhere near as accomplished as Emily the Criminal, which was anything but forgettable.
Yeah,
we still I remember it vividly, and I keep watching little clips of it and marveling at the movie. Yeah.
It was exceptional work and thought provoking, and it had something to say. You know, this falls squarely into the Eat the Rich type satire thing that we've seen before. I think, look, it was just, it's a dark comedy, it's meant to be. It was adequately engaging. I'm sorry I'm struggling to kind of articulate more detail about this movie, but it was fluffy and disposable in a way that I think a movie shouldn't be. So, again, Margaret Qualley is almost comedic in her protagonist, her antagonist role, rather.
I actually found her annoying.
But she's meant to be a little bit,
But again, I mean, so I'll stop there. Yes, the.
So I like this movie. I agree it's a back of the plane movie, or if it shows up on a Saturday afternoon, you're surfing through channels, you should definitely watch it. It's beautifully made. It's gorgeous to look at.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly serviceable.
Right.
I think actually this movie would have been substantially improved if the pacing had been ramped up.
Because
for a movie with this plot, you need it to be kind of zippy.
Yes.
And you also need it to have a bigger bite. So for a movie, again, with this plot, it needs to be a little mean. It needs to be nasty. It needs to be unapologetically nasty, which it's not.
Yeah.
So it's almost trying. It takes a plot which is pretty mean and kind of plays it not mean. So it kind of dilutes the impact of the story. You have seen this movie, Rashmi, but I think, the Oscars are in 1 week, and I think the most competitive category at Oscars this year is the international feature category. And one of the movies which did not get picked was the wonderful movie No Other Choice.
Yes.
And No Other Choice almost has an identical plot.
Yeah.
No Other Choice is about a man who is working in a paper factory. He's laid off, and he finds out he that's the only thing he can do is work at a paper factory. And there's only one other paper factory in Seoul.
Yeah.
And he realizes there are five people who are also applying for that same position. So he just decides to kill them off one by one so that he can get that job. Again, that's played as humor. It's played, but that movie does it with so much more flair and ingenuity and kind of
gumption.
And you watch with like your jaw on the floor. This one you kind of watch with a little weak smile on your face. Having said that, I also think that Glenn Powell and Margaret Qualley are probably the two most good-looking people right now in the movies. So, you know, I didn't mind watching them on the screen kind of do whatever it is that they were doing.
I just... Yeah.
His hair, there were a few things which I know in my notes. I wouldn't remember this as well. But it was very weird that Glenn Powell's hair kind of kept changing through the whole movie. I don't know if this is a trouble.
Well, I just had, I've literally written two lines. Why is he always wearing a cap?
Yeah, he is always wearing a cap. But his hair, I don't know if this movie was shot, it was a troubled production and it was shot over a year and a half and that's why his hairstyle keeps changing. And then the other thing is, there are these cops on his trail, right?
Because yeah.
But it's very weird that all the cops in this movie are black, which I don't have a problem with, but it seems so strange that there's like four detectives and they're all black. I mean, it has to be intentional. Is it a subversion? Are they just saying that usually it's the white cops who are after black criminals? Yeah, I don't know what, that... I noticed it. It was very strange. Yeah, I wish there was just... some more, you know, there's some more explanation to that. And Ed Harris kind of does Ed Harris-y things. I think he was pretty good being the, just like this nasty, nasty person in the movie.
Yeah.
If you remember him.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, like now you mentioned him, I'm like, oh yeah, he was in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I mean, the reason I think this movie has evaporated is it's one of those movies that attempts to kind of reintroduce multiple twists in the story mm-hmm. along the way. And I think not one of those twists caught me off guard and made me gasp. And therefore, you know, it pretty much played out as expected. The ending is almost ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of builds and it builds and it builds and it's it then overboils.
Yeah, and the balloon just pops.
Yes. Again, I'm going to avoid spoilers because you know.
Look, yeah. Oh, I remember it now. Yes.
See, we can't even remember it.
So look, I'm going to just wrap it up because I want to talk about the next movie.
Exactly.
So. Look, it's distinctly average, right? It is perfectly serviceable movie entertainment. Yeah. And I don't want anyone to think that this movie is not worth watching when it pops up on your Netflix queue, which it will do in a couple of months because it had a very short running in theaters. Then switch it on Friday night, nothing taxing. I think it's adequate, but, you know, Don't rush out and see this. You may have missed it already. I think, again, the theatre run may be over, so...
School.
I'm sorry. I think I gave it a distinctly average 5 out of 10.
Okay. Yasti?
I give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's pretty harmless. It could have been so much better if they had kind of... I'm repeating myself. If they had kind of zipped it up with the pacing and if it was kind of more nasty and mean.
Yeah. But,
be that as it may, like you said, serviceable is the right word. Nobody will, I mean, if you want to spend a couple hours, you know, being entertained, there's not a thing wrong with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
6 out of 10.
Same, 5 out of 10.
Yeah, okay.
Let's move on. Let's kill this one.
Moving along, then we're going to talk about the very anticipated Project Hail Mary.
Okay.
So, Rashmi.
Yep, so directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. This is the Lego Movie guys and many other things that they do, which is always wonderful. It's written by Drew Goddard, based on the movie based on the book by Andy Weir. He's also one of the writers. And it stars Ryan Gosling, Milana Vantrub, and Ken Leung. This is about a science teacher, Ryland Grace, who wakes up alone on a spaceship light years from Earth. As his memory returns, he uncovers a mission to stop a mysterious substance killing the sun and save Earth. An unexpected friendship may be the key. That's the IMDb description. You guys both read the book. I didn't look at any trailers. I didn't look at the book.
I'm going to interrupt Drew right there because I think the book is worth talking about. So this is written by Andy Weir, who famously wrote The Martian. And he's written a couple of other books.
Artemis, which is
his second book that was not
You said as good.
Well, it wasn't adapted into...
So can I add the Hollywood piece? So actually Chris Miller and Phil Lord were originally hired by Hollywood to adapt and make a movie out of Artemis.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
And then when Project Hail Mary came out, Ryan Gosling was very interested in it and he wanted the rights to it. And he kind of pulled these two guys and said, can you put Artemis on the shelf and can you come and direct Project Hail Mary instead. So that, oh, so yeah. Artemis, they may still come back and do Artemis, but that's kind of the connection.
I love this e-version of Yazdi.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Nice. And again, to ramble on a little bit about Andy Weir, because I'm a complete fangirl.
Yeah, you are.
Andy Weir. You are. The Martian is one of my favorite books of all time. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read The Martian, the Ridley Scott movie with Matt Damon from a few years ago is an adequate adaptation of it, and I think it was a fun movie, but
yes.
It doesn't come close to the novelization of the story. Yeah. So Project Hail Mary was a book that I bought it upon release. I struggled to get through Act One because it was very, very much in the same vein as The Martian, but kind of not as good. And then the story opens up and I fell in love with this book and I ripped through the remaining chapters like I haven't done in a long time. So the thing about this book was it's completely unfilmable.
Yeah.
That was, I went every
you
time.
You stole my notes.
Oh, okay. Every time I went to, when I knew they were making it, I was like, God, why? Don't touch this. Don't touch it. Don't ruin this. So, curious what you both thought of it. Leslie.
So you didn't say what you think about the movie.
I was adding your introduction.
Oh, okay. Gosh. My God. It's like, oh.
Everything that Joe said, I first started reading this book and I kind of abandoned it because, so what's the premise of the whole thing? The premise of the thing is a man wakes up with amnesia on a spaceship, realizes he's the only person alive on the spaceship. Everybody else is dead. And when he runs through his calculations, he finds out it's going to take him 114 years to get back to Earth. So he's decidedly going to die before he can get back to Earth. That's the basis. That's what the movie starts with. And then it's this whole existential crisis about you're going to die alone in space. And the book spends a big portion of it. And that's what I got tired of it, actually, initially. But if you get through that part, you know, it gets into all kinds of wondrous material. To the movie's great... To the movie's great advantage, the movie fast forwards through that whole part at the beginning very quickly. It doesn't kind of delve in this. What I liked about the movie is that considering that it's almost impossible to adapt the story, this is about as good as it can be done. I really like the fact that by virtue of this being directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller and written by Drew Goddard. Drew Goddard also wrote the screenplay for The Martian, movie.
That's right.
By virtue of that, the story has a shocking amount of humor in it. It's consistently funny. I don't remember this book being as funny. I had a lot of like existential thoughts about like what would I do in this situation and so forth. But this movie is just going for the laughs. There's even slapstick at one point. There's a piece where he's crossing over something and he kind of trips over something. So they're really milking this for the humor of it, which, mind you, I don't mind at all. So I like that kind of deviation. I would just leave out the very last scene from the movie, which I know is in the book, but that's the only part that didn't work for me. This is exceptional filmmaking. It's like the level of difficulty is 9,000 and they somehow got to 10,000.
Wow. Okay. So. Joe. What did you think of the movie?
Oh, my goodness. As beloved as this material was, I was not excited at all. And not only that, but I made the mistake late last year of keeping my eyes open during a trailer for the movie, which had two reveals that I think were ruinous to me from the story, from the perspective of the book.
Mm.
So... That you know, for me, I thought this movie is just going to be problematic. Why don't touch this material?
Yeah,
it is a really well done adaptation. It's better than I think it could have been done because my imagination could not take me there. My imagination could not certainly not take me to where the movie goes in part two, about halfway at its halfway point. And the way it's done and the way that it's characterized and the warmth and the love and the I was choking up towards the end of it. It's a very emotional story in a way that I didn't expect it to be. And because so much of that happens in the character's head in the in the book, in the novel, we feel those things. The task that has been done here of translating what is basically impossible to do to screen, I have nothing but admiration for this. It was excellent.
Yeah. So look, I'm the only one who hasn't read the book. So I came out, I didn't know what we were going to get. I knew that it was going to be set in space. I absolutely love this movie. I came out with such a warm feeling. It's so emotional. It's so heartfelt. At its core, it's about friendship and love. Actually, it's about love and the lengths you go to maintain that love. And I'm not necessarily talking about romantic love. I'm just talking about, you know, the love that you have for your friends and what you would do. It's a complete fantasy movie. There's nothing real or grounded about this. It's a fantasy movie set in space. And it's kind of like, it's just beautiful. It's beautiful.
I'm biting my lip.
I know. I didn't know what's a spoiler and what's not in your minds, because we haven't had the discussion about what in the trailer you thought were spoilers. But nothing spoiled for me. I think it's really well put together. And I would agree with you. It's a space comedy.
It is. I want to just send 97 boos to Amazon MGM, which is releasing this movie, because that trailer is a crime. That trailer is a crime. The trailer has things from the second act of the movie that nobody should know about when they go in and sit in the cinema scene. And not only are they doing that, Ryan Gosling was on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon yesterday. They showed a clip from the movie, which is completely from the last third of the movie, which I don't want anybody seeing that clip. Then they know exactly what this movie is about. So I don't know what they're doing. Do you really have to reveal the whole premise of the movie to sell it? It just really annoys me. You can sell it as a follow-up to Martian with Ryan Gosling space movie. That's all you need to sell it as.
Yeah.
So shame on them.
Boo. I don't know. I think it's going to reduce your enjoyment of the movie. I haven't seen the trailer because I didn't watch any of the trailers, because you said do not watch any of the trailers. Right. But I don't think my enjoyment, knowing anything about it, would have been... I don't think it would have been less impactful to me.
Maybe it's because of the way that the narrative in the book plays out.
Maybe.
They do a lot of the flashback stuff, right, which is fine. But then when the
Was there a point in
the movie pivots?
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're reading the book, was there a moment when you were gasped? Oh my God, okay, I see.
150%. And not only that, but that's when my reading accelerated, because I was page turning. I was reading until 3 a.m. I was I couldn't put it down.
Okay.
Nobody who sits down to watch this movie should know about nerve system.
Right.
And all the trailers, all the promotional material tells you the trend, tells you about the friendship, which kind of ruins it. That's at the heart of the movie.
Okay. I personally, not having read the book, I don't think it makes a difference. I think it actually enhances the fact of... knowing what you're going to get in some ways is enjoyable.
I think the way it plays out in the movie is fine, but I think knowing that in the trailer... Maybe you didn't see the trailers.
I didn't,
So I think when you still got that moment.
Yeah.
I think that moment was not... Again, it was, to me, it's firmly spoiler territory. So I'm not going to talk about it.
Go ahead.
Can I just say two other things?
Yeah, you can.
One thing is, one of the... You introduced it, right? Whoever introduced it, you forgot to mention that the wonderful German actress Sandra Hüller.
Yasdi. Good point. That was me.
And Sandra Hüller with an awful, awful wig. But be that as it may, I think that's a very difficult role. Eva, whatever her last name is, of the Petrova line. And that's perfect casting.
Yes.
That is perfect casting.
It's as if the book was written with her in mind.
With her in mind.
Oh, really?
And again, the e-Hollywood part. This is, I found out from the Jimmy Fallon interview. When they were filming it, between takes, Sandra Hüller, they had adjoining, rooms. And Sandra Hüller was humming songs all the time. And Ryan Gosling was so amazed by her voice that he insisted that she sing in the movie. That was never intended. So because she has such a good singing voice, there is a piece, and I think actually that's the best scene in the movie. I don't want to spoil it. But because that really moved me. So I like how kind of it's been all put together. And the second thing I will say, and I will shut up, is I always complain about how the music score to movies ruin everything. About how they kind of you know, tell you exactly how you should feel, what you should do. This movie, the score is as good as I've seen in
it was any very film. I wrote down score,
the
yeah.
The music
great
is doing
score.
So much hard work yeah. and it elevates every scene, right? Because for most of the movie, it's just Ryan Gosling. Let's yes. face it. And the score is actually being a second character. It's kind of elevating every scene, and the score is beautiful.
It is.
It pulls music from the silent era. It pulls music from the jazz era. It pulls music from like Balkan music, and that score. I can't wait to get the score and just play it. So okay, now I'll shut up.
Yeah, I mean, look, I said to Joe. Sorry, I was just going to say, I said to Joe before the movie started. You know, I'm not a really big Ryan Gosling fan. Generally, he's okay. But he's really good in this movie.
I mean, I said in response to that point,
yeah.
Ashmi, I said, I think he's a pretty good choice
yeah.
for this character.
Yeah.
Because of all of the qualities that you don't like him. I think, you know, Ryland Grace, I think is the name of the character. Yes. He, in the book, he's not fully likable.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I just want to go back to, you say that this is fantastical, Ashmi, and a complete fantasy in the vein of, you know, those other movies you referenced.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that they made the choices that they made in adapting the screenplay, because I think the book is not a fantasy. As with The Martian, I think there's a reasonable grounding in
right.
scientific science. Principles.
Yeah.
And while the stuff is still, like, The Martian is ridiculous, right? Like, one man gets himself back from Mars on his own.
Yeah.
But Andy Weir...
But it's scientifically
writes
possible.
It plausibly.
Right, plausible.
Yeah.
Right? He's thought about how, you know, astrophysics works, planets,
sure.
you know, slingshots, gravity, growing food in an environment where there is no... So he's thought about all of those things, sustaining life on Mars, right? I mean, I'm talking about The Martian. In this movie, every single thing that happens here, we're talking about, you know, what's destroying... You know, what's putting our planet at risk
yeah.
that leads to this whole mission
yeah.
To space. It's all complete. Look, I mean, there's molecular biology. There is, you know, physics. There is, like, all sorts of stuff in the book that may not actually work in actuality
yeah.
in our real world, but is plausibly written, including some aspects of what comes
like,
again. I'm gonna
like argon and graphite and all that
correct.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Xenon,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, look, you know, the choices that they made to not bog down the movie in that stuff, I thought would have been difficult because I understood the stuff that was happening in the movie because I'd read the book. I don't know I would have kept up without it. So we'll talk about that, Ashmi, after the podcast.
Yeah.
I literally thought I was being left behind. I had to remember, oh, yeah, that was this.
I don't think it matters.
And that's what I'm saying. It's
so
very
I think
judicious
it's, well, that it's,
choices
it's,
in adapting
yeah,
the screenplay.
Yeah, so I think they've done such a good job that it doesn't matter. You could have called it, like, Gasagon or, you know, made up something. The fact that it's based in reality is great, but it doesn't matter because, again, the movie is working so hard to entertain you. It's so well put together, so perfectly paced. I can't believe it. I just saw it's 2 hours and 36 minutes. I literally thought it was like an hour and a half. It's a testament to how well it's made that it doesn't matter.
There are certain things which happen in the second half of the movie, which I think would be so daunting to anybody who is working with CGI. Like, how do you give a form to this, right?
Yeah.
How do you give a physical representation to this? And the CGI just completely comes up and meets that challenge. It's just,
yeah.
It's so believable.
But not only the CGI, but the sound design.
Oh, the sound
yeah.
design
because,
exquisite.
Because I remember there's an audio version. I you know, there was a time I read most of my books on Audible. And, you know, I didn't buy this one on Audible. I bought the Kindle version, so I read the text. And again, I'm like, not only could I not think through how to adapt this visually, but audibly.
Mm.
Like
yeah.
the sound design in this movie is extraordinary.
Yeah.
In what they've done.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, go ahead.
I mean, at no point in the movie did I feel, oh, this is, you know, these two directors working on a sound stage somewhere.
Right.
At no point. I believed yeah. when he was in space, when he gets flung out of a spaceship, I was with him. because of the music, because of the sound design, because of how it's being visually imagined. Like, whoever did the storyboarding for this, just kudos to them.
Yeah, I love that it had bits of Arrival.
Ish, yeah.
I like that. I like the Arrival themes. That was clever.
Yeah.
It was very clever. I liked it. Right. Okay. Should we sum this up?
Go ahead.
Go watch this. Go watch this. We watched this in IMAX, and the sound was amazing, and the visuals were amazing, and the film is amazing. It's a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, I've often said that watching a movie is like trying to walk a dog. Sometimes you fight the dog where it's taking you, and sometimes you don't. I let this dog walk me all around the park, wherever it wanted to go. Mm-hmm. I was very happy with it. And, you know, I've read the book a year ago or so, and in spite of that, I really enjoyed every step of it, even when I knew what was coming. And I think it moves the whole, not to be hyperbolic, but I think it moves the craft of filmmaking to a higher level, with the CGI, with the sound design, with how much heart it is, like how much heart it has. So a 9 out of 10 for me as well. Wow. This is like, this is like great filmmaking, good stuff. And I can't wait. That soundtrack is just, it's just blown my mind. I can't wait to get on that soundtrack. Yeah. Not the soundtrack, the
score.
The score. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, look, I wanted to hate this because I was like, you can't do this.
Yeah.
You're going to screw this up. And they handled it with such love and care. And I have such love and admiration of the source material that they've given us a slightly different take on it. I mean, it follows the story beat for beat for beat.
Yeah, because I asked you the question. Yeah.
Very, 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 it has high fidelity with the material. They don't take too many.
Correct. It gave me the movie that I saw in my head while reading the book, and I can't give them any higher accolade than that. It's an exceptional piece of adaptation. I loved the hell out of this movie. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 10, but it's going to be a 9 from me as well.
Oh, wow, three nines.
It's wonderful. And I was surprised at how emotional the movie was, especially in its closing moment. I agree. The epilogue, I could have thrown that away in the book as well.
I could have thrown that away in the book.
No, I loved it.
The very last scene.
I loved it.
But
yeah,
no, I loved it.
It was like an A plus all the way, and then it suddenly dropped to a B. I was like, no, we don't need that.
No, anyway. I loved it.
I was like, okay. I was speaking to the author as I was reading it. I was like, Andy, no, I want to rip these pages
like a children's film.
I loved
but nonetheless,
it.
There's a reason it's there, and reasons that
and it appealed to me
much more important than what I might than my opinion. So. Wonderful stuff. I'm really glad you liked it.
Because I did.
I was nervous that they were going to take one of my favorite pieces of modern literature and trash it.
No
one would then go and, you know, and that just happened with something. We saw an adaptation that was not done well. And it was
The only thing they didn't do well, and I will say this, is he wakes up, like, you know, on the spaceship, like he's been sleeping for like who knows how long, how many years. He's got this big beard and hair.
He looks like Jesus.
And then he shaves himself and he cuts his hair, and he has the most stylish haircut through the rest of the movie. I would love to be able to cut my hair the way Ryan Gosling's hair looks.
I could try.
No. I'm like, come on. You did not cut your hair like that yourself. But anyway.
If that's what you're noticing.
Yes.
I thought that was going to be like, oh, there's someone else there and it's going to turn into like...
By the way, I want to get his glasses. I loved his frame glasses, his gold frame glasses, and I loved his sweater.
You should ask ChatGPT.
I should ask ChatGPT. Where he got.
Yeah, I've seen a sweater like that without
the. I love that sweater. I've seen wears that on sweater you. Through the whole movie.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, yes. I saw you wear one like that the other day.
That
it was
might
nice.
Be Project Hail Mary.
Like a shawl. Shawl.
The merch.
The shawl
yes.
collar. Yeah.
I'm get on the merch.
I'm going to ask you. Yes. I'm going to ask ChatGPT. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Yes, I know you've got things that you need to be getting on with. So that's our cue to wrap up today's podcast. Thank you for listening. We brought you reviews of How to Make a Killing and Project Hail Mary. We'll be back very soon with more Movie Wallers. Until then. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.